This time last week, Reading Football Club was so close to perfection there were tears of pride. But this week, Reading FC are so far away from perfection, it's tears of anger. And we are going to get that anger flow here on the Tull SM Podcast, episode 59, our penultimate episode of the season. Just as Reading have two games to go, we've got two podcasts to go. So stick with us for the next hour as we recap what has been, quite frankly, an awful week for Reading Football Club. We're going to do our very best to get you through it, try and pick you back up, or at very least, give you something to get the anger out.
To think about, at least.
Indeed. And I am joined, as you've no doubt just heard, by Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy.
Hello.
Johnny Williams.
Evening.
And Mr. David Harris, Handbags Harris.
Good evening.
It's a full house again.
It's very much a foursome nowadays.
Indeed.
I like it.
Indeed.
Awesome.
We're expanding foursome. Expanding the brand. The Fantastic Four. Just in time for the reboot at the cinema.
Not quite the Magnificent Seven of 98.
Not yet.
No.
We could probably get...
We could probably get
a few of them down here, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know what Paddy Kelly and Scott Howie or whatnot are doing this year. Probably not.
Not much. I would have thought.
Does Scott Howie not turn up for that Legends team occasionally? The one that plays, you know, he's got like AD and Mick and Tim. We do, yeah. Well, they're playing like the charity games, don't they?
Yeah, I played against them. I didn't know Scott Howie wasn't in goal.
Yeah.
No.
I know Keith Scott turns out.
Yeah. Fleck. Brayton.
Oh, magic. Anyway,
Fleck. He didn't turn out when he played for us.
The depressing thing is, both Paul Brace and Robert Fleck would have improved Reading's front line in the past week. And I'm almost serious when I say that. Because Reading played two games this week and they lost them both. They failed to score in both. 0 points, 0 goals, 0 fun, 0 entertainment. 0 things to really be positive about, Johnny. We'll start with the Wednesday game. We recorded on, Tuesday last week and thought Reading might, you know, spur into life on the back of that semi-final. We thought they were going to be a bit of a hangover, but this is Birmingham, who hadn't won away all year and had nothing to play for. Surely Reading could pull something out of the bag. They didn't.
Yeah.
They lost 1-0. And anything to say about this game?
It was just really depressing. I think, I can't remember their manager's name, but he sort of said afterwards...
Gary Rowett.
He said... Well, we haven't won away in 2015, so I thought I'd, you know, try out a new formation, change things around, and, you know, soon enough it works for them. I mean, yeah, as you say, taking momentum off Saturday, one of the best performances in recent years against the mighty Arsenal, you think, yeah, let's carry a bit of momentum against another team that's going nowhere, another team that's got nothing to play for, and another defeat, another goalless game for us at home. And, I mean, I actually thought we created chances, and it's been the problem in the last 5 or 6 games as well. We've created chances, but no one can finish them. I remember 2 times when we were one-on-one. One was, I think, Nick Blackman, and one was Kwesi Appiah, and neither of them shot. So I think it's confidence that's something to do with the club, around the club at the moment, because we had chances, decent enough chances, to score in that game. But you just, somehow you knew that we were never going to put the ball in the back of the net. And it's very frustrating. Because, you know, as I said on last week's podcast, I think if we'd had a decent striker, or at least an informed striker, for the last 3 or 4 weeks, we'd have got some far better results than we've actually got, and we'd have certainly bloody scored at home.
Westy, we went into this game, there's a handful of changes, but Steve Clarke still kept what I said before the game, was a pretty strong side. You had the likes of Chalobah, you had Ake out there, you had a host of first-team players. A couple of changes, Jake Cooper came in for Alex Pearce, but other than that, you couldn't really say this was an understrength thread inside. But should he have played the kids?
I don't know. I think, again, Cooper had a particularly good game, and he has played well in general when he's come into the side, so I suppose he was a little bit upset when Zach Knight turned up and took his place more recently, and so he should be. Same as Cox has been bombed out as far completely, and he's put strikers in who haven't scored goals, so you can understand why there's rumours that he was a little bit upset the other week that he wasn't playing. But they just can't, score. And you're saying, you know, they're nervous, the confidence is low, but there's nothing to play for. You should be quite relaxed and be able to play your game the way you want to play. We're not going to get relegated, we know that already. So I just can't understand why a team with so many strikers on the books at the moment can't put a ball in the net. It's ridiculous.
Dave, any thoughts from you from that Birmingham game?
No, it's been covered pretty well. Don't shoot, don't score. And when we do shoot, it's generally off target. Yeah. Not even working goalkeepers.
The thing that depressed me the most was the fact that as soon as Birmingham injected any sort of quality onto the pitch, and that was Damari Gray, the defence crumbled. And people have said, oh, but Steve Clarke's got so sorted out defensively. I'm not seeing a lot of that recently. I'm seeing some really bad goals. We'll come on to the Brentford game in a minute. But again, Birmingham's goal, awful. Switching off from a quick corner, I think it was. Just bad.
Basic defending.
But I thought for 75 minutes, we controlled them quite well. And I can't remember them having a decent chance themselves before that moment.
But that's been the story of the last three home games, hasn't it? Yeah. Bournemouth, we controlled the game, couldn't score. They had one chance to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, again, that, you know, you could argue that was a bit of a defensive lapse as well. It's those moments that other teams have that we can't seem to have. And you know, I wrote the match report for the game and I said, this was like a bit of a scouting mission for Steve Clarke because he rotated the squad, put out some kids, had some kids on the bench like Stacey and Novakovic that he brought on. But the one player that did change the game was Damaro Gray. He injected pace into their front line and he just completely changed the momentum of the game. The Birmingham fans got behind them. The team thought, actually, hang on, you know, we can sort of strike now. And yeah, it was most frustrating, really, that the goal came from effectively a set piece.
So you could almost write that one off on a long list of home games you want to write off. But then Reading actually came up against a team who had something genuinely to play for. I mean, I know Bournemouth had a lot to play for as well, but that was on the eve of the cup. And again, you might be able to pass that one off, give them some excuse and leeway. This game, Reading had no excuse. Came up against a Brentford side who desperately needed to win. And not just win, they needed to win by a couple of goals. So they needed to close the goal difference gap on Ipswich. Backed by 3,500 passionate Brentford fans. There was actually, I thought, a really good atmosphere in the stadium for us. I thought Reading fans were the best they've been for a long time. The biggest crowd we'd had for a little while as well. And again, Dave, first 5 minutes, I thought Reading actually looked all right.
Well, I actually thought we looked generally okay throughout the majority of the game. But again, it's that final third. And against Birmingham, there were, you know, there was a lot of huff and puff in and around the area, little bit of attempts at neat and tricky interplay. It was a lot more direct against Brentford, and we had clear chances to score. You know, we're talking uncontested shots on goal. Remember Gareth McCleary's shot over when well placed on the penalty spot, free headers in the 6 yard box, which went wide, and of course Simon Cox in the last 10 minutes, which was actually my cue to leave. I'd had enough by that point.
I did see you sneaking out.
We played okay to a point, but it's you know, yeah, what more can you say? Even when presented with a clear chance, just can't stick it in the back of the net.
If we've not expressed enough frustration, I'll introduce Hal Robson-Canoe's role up front.
Now, well, I want to say something about this. I was listening to the radio this morning, and someone actually texted in and said, I thought Robson-Canoe needs to be left up front because he was a constant threat. I thought, constant threat to what? I think he touched the ball once and then failed to spend most of the time on the floor. I don't know what your thoughts were, but I thought he was abysmal up front on his own.
Again.
I can't remember any contribution McCleary shot aside that the front three made.
Yeah. If you go onto the tylersen.com right now, you can look at Will's excellent statistical analysis of the Brentford game. It's got illustrations, both match shots and graphics. And if you look at the heat map of how Robson-Canoe's touches, and I'm just showing the other guys, it just tells an absolute story. If you look at the great big gigantic vacuum around the penalty box, just
for a striker.
And yeah. Not just that, the one that stands out, as Will has correctly pointed out, is how many touches Hal Robson-Canoe had in the centre circle. And that's your meat and drink as a lone striker, isn't it? Because you've got to win those balls.
You've got to control the
ball.
Hold
it up. There is one blob in there, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. In fact, if you drew about a 20-yard square space around the centre circle, I think there's probably one other touch in there. Mm. Not good enough. And this is a player who, again, he's got all the physical attributes you want. He's quick. He's strong. He's not terrible in the air. He's scored some good headed goals over the years. He's got a great shot from distance. Can score goals from short range as well. He's got everything you want. Why is it that this player cannot put anything together?
I don't know where his position is. I really don't understand. He's not good on the wing. He's not good up front. Mm. You certainly wouldn't put him in midfield or defence, would you? So I find it harder and harder to justify his place in the team.
3 years ago, when we sold certain Michael Antonio, I went on record on another well-known website and said that we'd sold the wrong winger. Many people laughed me off at the time, but almost every single week at Forest, at Sheffield Wednesday before that, what do you see in their stats? You see an Antonio assist or an Antonio goal.
Yeah,
three years ago, I turned around and said, in 5 years, he'll be a Premier League player. He's got 2 years to do it. I generally still stand by that.
I saw the wrong winger. When he was at Reading, he was just raw, that was all. He just needed a bit more about him, didn't he? In a few games, he'd have been a better player, and he turned out to be. He had all the attributes as well, big, powerful player. And they've got Robson-Canoe, he's just poor every week.
But Robson-Canoe had showed so many of those attributes. He'd scored some great goals. I remember him scoring a cracking goal at Millwall in the promotion season. He seemed to have so much potential. And this is old ground. I don't want to spend too much longer because we've had this debate
all season.
We're on, what, episode 59. I don't think you could find one of these that doesn't have a Hal Robson Kanu debate in it somewhere. But I completely understand where you're coming from, Dave, and I loved Antonio as well. But this is just a case of unfulfilled potential. Because looking at the two players at the same time, I don't think even you would have expected Robson Kanu to fail this badly. Or am I wrong? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I completely refute that. I don't think that Robson Kanu showed a great deal at all in his appearances up until... he started playing in the Premier League. But at least with Antonio, his all-round game was it appeared to be significantly better. He was stronger, he was quicker, he could take a man on. He could sometimes put a cross in. Obviously, he was very, very raw. Robson Kanu, you just got to turn around and say, what effect did he have on the game? He could score some quite spectacular goals, but spectacular goals won't always win you games, and they won't happen in every single game. It's about your all-round game, and Robson Kanu, unfulfilled potential, or just not very good.
I think the problem is, and it's a problem for most of this side, is they've been here too long, and especially someone like Hal Robson Kanu, who the fans generally loathe. If the team is playing badly, he's the first one that you knock and that you boo. And, you know, there are so many people around me now that cheer when he's brought off. And, you know, I sit sort of right behind the dugouts, and a few of them are, you know, calling for him to come off as, you know, as soon as he enters the pitch, calling him a donkey, etc. So I think, well, you know, I'll keep my opinion to myself on that matter. But, you know, when other players at the club, we said that they, you know, they perhaps needed a fresh start. And I think Hal is near at the very, very top of that list, because he's not only been here too long, but the fans think he's outstayed his welcome as well, more than any other player.
All I'll say to Dave is, speak to Wales fans about how they view Hal Robson Kanu.
And that's away from Reading.
And they will give you a completely different story. And he's been part of one of the most successful Wales teams of recent
years.
That's
exactly what I mean.
You're preaching to the converted, mate, because I am Welsh.
As a Wales fan then, having watched Wales... Okay. Is this since England have been doing badly, or...?
Change allegiance.
I don't know if you've seen many Wales games, but speak to him a lot and they'll say he's got a great partnership, admittedly, with the world's most expensive player, Gareth Bale.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying this, everyone's marking Bale, no one's interested in Robson Kanu.
But he still does good things, and I will still defend the fact that I've seen him put in some very decent shifts for Reading, and he's got attributes, but as Johnny said, he's not delivered.
Not good enough.
And if it's mental, I don't know. But anyway,
I think at least some of it has to be mental.
Yeah, must be. We'll get on. He's not the entire problem, though. No,
not at all. And as we mentioned, other players miss chances. Gareth McCleary, who's had a miserable league campaign.
Yeah, I think it's been poor all season for Gareth McCleary.
Has he got a league goal yet? I don't think he's got a league goal this season.
I don't think so. No,
he played better last year. We had a broken back.
It's sad, but it's true. And again, I mean, the midfield. Oliver Norwood comes back in, plays some decent passes. Danny Williams, I thought, was full of energy and then just did stupid things. Kept giving the ball away. Fell over the ball.
Again, basics, wasn't it? All around the pitch.
Mackie's reverted to type. He had a good month, which got him second or third in player of the season. But that month aside, and the running aside, off the last couple of games, would you want to bring him back? I mean, I know the fans were chanting, Jamie Mackie, we want you to stay, but... As we were speculating 3 or 4 months ago, you can see why he's bounced around the teams and bounced around the divisions.
He's all effort and no quality.
And again, you can absolutely afford to have a player like that in your squad.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because that's what you want. You want a player who's going to catch fire for 5 or 6 weeks and give you a lift.
And he does lift the crowd, to be fair to Mackie. Yeah.
Absolutely. But overall, Dave, I'd summarise his performance as just too casual. And nothing demonstrated to me that more than the sheer number of times Reading got caught offside.
And that first goal was poor as well, wasn't it? Yeah. It just drifted in. Thanks very much. Goal.
Casual is probably the right word. Yeah. Yeah, it was almost as though they were back in the changing rooms waiting for the summer to arrive, wasn't it?
Flip-flops right.
You mentioned Gareth McCleary, and I've paid particular attention to him recently, and you could almost say it's half-hearted from him. There's a lot of disinterest. You know, he's got an outstanding burst of speed about him. He's technically really superb with the ball at his feet. He can make fullbacks look bloody stupid. Haven't seen it at all.
It comes back to the point that I was making about Hal Robson Kanu. If you watch both of them for a game, especially the last few games, they've probably played as badly as each other. But McCleary has that little trick, or, you know, little back heel, little sprint inside. Whereas Robson Kanu could, you know, he could score a hat-trick and so you'd still be complaining about him the next game.
And sadly, that complacency and lack of confidence has spread throughout the team, even to Michael Hector and Alex Pearce, two players who, again, played some of the best football that they played for Reading at Wembley. Two short games later, both of them have got to do better, I think, for both goals, especially the first. I mean, Pearce has been done horribly by Gray. I mean, you've got to ask where Jordan Obita was at the time. And Michael Hector, again, just doesn't want it enough and lets Judge, I think it is, get in front of him and score. Whereas I think there was an incident in the second half where I want to say it was Robson Kanu at the other end and he had a chance. There was a quick ball flashed across the front of the box and the Brentford player busted a gut just to get in front and deflect it behind for a corner. And it sums it up. And again, Michael Hector, at other times, he was taking an extra touch and you just got the feeling...
He got too tight to a man and allowed, I think it might have been Gray in one-on-one.
Yeah.
No, yeah, someone in one-on-one and Federici made a good save.
Yeah, just so casual from them. And the second goal, have Brentford got about four players in front of our defenders for a free header? They were queuing up to score.
They were queuing up, yeah. And the ironic thing is, McCleary takes a yellow card for that foul or that drag back. Yeah. You think, well, you know, he's prevented a goal here.
He's been outpaced for that as well.
Funnily enough, yeah.
How often do you see Gareth McCleary outpaced? And outpaced easily for that. Mm. And again, that goes to what you just said, Dave.
I remember it quite vividly, and I just thought he's been out. Gareth McCleary shouldn't be outpaced because he's not running at full pace.
Yeah,
he's not
half-hearted,
giving it 100% to actually chase back and try and at least make a challenge. Just can't be arsed here.
Yeah,
just drag him back, take the yellow. I mean, for the two. No, just yeah.
Do what you want. I mean, we've got to give some credit to Brentford as well. There's a reason they are hunting the playoffs. I thought they were very good. They
played some of the best football I've seen here.
And they
made it look like we didn't have a midfield at times. I mean, we didn't have a midfield at times anyway, but the way they found space, their quick passing. I mean, you know, I think in our Brentford preview on the side, we asked about the situation about Warburton, who's definitely leaving at the end of the season. I'm not quite sure why. I'd happily have him here if he's going to make us play that sort of football.
Yeah, I mean, and again, the space in that midfield came from the fact that Reading's defence and midfield were too far apart. Again, just go look at Will's article. I can't stress enough, you can see pictures of how far apart the defence and the midfield are. Massive gaps to play it. And teams that play good football with players like Pritchard, they're just going to tear you apart.
Yeah, they'll play around you, and that's what happened.
And they fully deserve their win. Credit to them. I'd like to say good luck in the playoffs, but Reading hold of their fate almost in their hands, and I don't think you get any... going to get any favours from us. I summed up this game and this whole entire era with the final substitute of this game, where Reading's number 9, Kate, was off and Reading's record striker of all time, record signing striker, was brought on. Harry Robson Kanu off, Nick Blackman on. Their combined goals this season, anyone want to guess?
Two, three,
four.
It is four.
Four goals.
Two from the penalty spot.
It's abysmal, isn't it?
Two goals from open play from Hal Robson Kanu and Nick Blackman. And I'm not going to have anyone saying, oh, but they don't start every week.
Don't matter.
They've started a good 50 games between them.
Yeah.
Mm. Awful. Awful. Jake Cooper has scored as many goals from open play as Hal Robson Kanu and Nick Blackman put together.
Yeah, it's poor. I think he was a top scorer when he was left on the pitch. He was a top scorer
at some
point.
At the end of the game.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. A bloke who's never played, hardly played all season, ends up being your top goal scorer on the pitch.
11 times in 15 home games, Reading have gone goalless. And we've got the worst record in the Championship since March. I think that's 1-12 now.
A few dissenting voices about the manager as well. What's our thoughts on that at the moment? Because let's face it, Atkins didn't do a lot
worse. I will
leave
that. I'll cut you off because we have a question of that in the mailbag.
Oh, we'll do it then.
We will do it then. But we've got one very quick news bites, and then we'll be on to pub chat, so stay with us after the sting.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. Just a couple of news stories to round up. Obviously, things drying up. Unfortunately, I haven't got an Anton Ferdinand injury update for you.
Is he still here?
I did see him standing by the dugout.
What? He's got a 2-year contract.
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah. So no Anton Ferdinand injury update. I will ask Charles on the podcast extra on Friday, though, just in case. Could line up at Derby in that final game. He's got an unbeaten record when he plays for Reading.
He was pretty good.
Player
of
the season.
He pretty good when he played for Half Hour.
Yeah.
It strikes me as one of the... I think someone should make a website like isAntonFerdinandFitYet.com. They do these with these sorts of things.
Timer.
Yeah. Just a yes or a no, just a giant word in the middle.
How much Anton Ferdinand has been paid since he last played, something like that.
That would be even more depressing.
That would be depressing.
Tweet us at the Tartlist End if you are so creative and do come up with such things.
Link it to the club as well while you're at it.
So Anton Ferdinand not in the final three for Player of the Season, gents. Those three went to the final three players were Jamie Mackey, Michael Hector and Adam Federici, only one of whom has a contract here next season. The winner was Adam Federici. I don't think that comes as any surprise to anyone. I did think Michael Hector made a great run for it with some really improved performances, especially in the second half of the season. But I think over the balance, Federici a worthy winner.
Yeah, he's the only one that's deserved it for the whole season.
Yeah, I suppose you can't really argue with it.
If it wasn't for him, we'd be in a relegation. Well,
we'd be down.
We'd be as bad as Wigan Millwall.
The only thing I was disappointed about, and I'm not surprised about it, is that Norwood didn't make the top three. And that's because I think arguably him and Federici were our two best players of certainly the first half of this season. But obviously, you know, as we've seen in recent years, people like Guffer and Pogrebniak aren't even considered when they have good early season form. It's only what you do towards the end of the season.
Yeah, it is only what you do towards the end of the season.
As I said earlier about Mackey, you know, he had a very good month or a very good 6 weeks, but not much aside from that. Whereas I think Norwood was consistently good for 4 or 5 months. But as you say, you only really remember what happened recently. So.
Yeah, and I think even if Norwood had stuck around in the team and played badly, I think he would have got more consideration. But getting dropped altogether from Shalabar just ruined any chance he had.
Definitely.
But yeah, congratulations to them. We'll be having our version of Player of the Season, the Tarlhurst End vote for Player of the Season. And we're also going to do a newcomer award and a most disappointing of the season. So there will be three awards that you'll be able to vote on from the end of the season.
We'll have to buy a new one because Hal took it last time, didn't he? Because he won it 3 times in a row.
I think he could have another fourth on his hands. Yeah,
lifetime achievement award. So stay tuned to thetarlhurstend.com for those. One other bit of news, and I don't think the timing of this could have been any worse given how we played on Saturday, was Reading announcing their season ticket renewal prices. And the good news, folks, is that I think they've generally given us a pretty fair deal. Well, if you enjoy watching Reading at the moment, you'll consider it a fair deal. Season ticket prices have been frozen again. I think this is the sixth year in a row now they've frozen them. £375 for your renewal if you're an adult in the West, East or North Stands.
Not in the Upper West, basically.
In the Upper West. Yeah. And it's £395 if you want to buy a season ticket new. So, again, I don't think you can really fault that for value. Less than £20 a game, considering you're paying upwards, I think... Liverpool fans were protesting today that they had to pay £50 to go away to Hull to watch a game.
Oh, God. Football's so mad, isn't it? £50 to watch a game of football.
Yeah, so I think credit to Reading for that. They've also announced some great initiatives for younger fans. If you buy an adult season ticket and you have a child under 7, they can go for free. And if you are 18 to 24, you can buy a season ticket for just £135.
I wonder how many people are going to register an under 7 ticket and then not take a kid and just have a seat next to them for the whole game, for the whole season.
Well, can you register a season ticket for under 7s, can you?
Well, that's I think how it works.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If you take an under 7 ticket is free with a concession or an adult.
Oh, that's good. I'll do that, definitely.
Exactly. So you can, even if they don't want to go, turn up every week, you can...
Probably take my tribe of 6, I reckon I'd have up half a stadium.
Yeah, there you go. Fill them up. So yes, again, some great deals. And they did need to do something, gents, I think, to get that 18 to... Because the old bracket was up to, I think, 21... And that didn't really address the fact that there are a lot of people that just come straight out of uni, they've not got the best job, and again, going to football and spending £350 or however much on a game by game basis is too much. So
I think you need to start encouraging kids to come as well, because that's your fans coming up and watching you in 20, 30 years' time, you know. So it's good they've done that, and they couldn't really put any prices up, could they? Let's face it, it's not really worthy a season of putting prices up.
Any complaints, Johnny, Dave?
No, I get a year of £135, so I'm happy enough with that.
You're not 24,
Johnny.
Come on,
Johnny.
I am 24.
Who's your brother? You're Kubu.
No, he's my dad. He's a bit older.
Right, that just about wraps up News Bites. We'll move on to Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. This week's topic of discussion, lapse of appreciation. And this comes in the wake of the fact that Reading held their end of season lap of appreciation at the end of the Brentford game, and not in front of many people, Johnny.
No, well, not in front of me anyway. Probably not in front of any of us either.
No, I left anyone before that.
Dave, I was gone as well. I left at the full-time whistle, gave it a very quick And that was me done for the Modesty Stadium this year.
I was probably chucking into my sausage and chips from Deep Blue by that point.
Good man. Had a better time than people still left in the stadium by that.
So us mainstays, all four of us, decided actually we're not going to stick around for lap appreciation.
Okay, so let's be critical of ourselves. Should we, as loyal royals, have stuck around to give them a round of applause?
No, I think you should show your disapproval and walk out and leave them to walk around on their own.
I think the idea of it is for the players to show their appreciation of the support, and it's up to the support then whether they want to stay. So
win games, that shows them their appreciation of our support.
Yeah, if we've got decent results in the last two
exactly.
games,
win games.
You know, the atmosphere around the club would have been so much more positive. Even if we scored on Saturday, if we'd won the game, I'm sure you know a hell of a lot more people would have stayed around. But the fact is, it's not very good. It's not very inspiring, Wembley aside.
And I'm not even convinced that the players, and being completely honest here, deserve it. Because you show your appreciation to players that have given their all for the club. And there are certain players that do deserve a round of applause. Mm. And you know, I'd happily shake their hands and say, thank you, you know, you did everything this season. Certain other players do not deserve that under any circumstances. Because they've not done enough. Mm. I'm sorry, I do not look at that Reading squad and say, you know what, lads, you've done your best.
Yeah.
They got a tremendous reception at the end of the game at Wembley.
Yep.
A great course of approval because they 100% deserved it. They'd given absolutely everything they had for the club that day, even if it was perhaps motivated by personal glory rather than club pride. But they got the reception they deserved. They got exactly what they deserved on Saturday.
Yeah.
You cannot subject fans to 11 goalless games in 15.
Mm.
And then expect a load of them to stay behind and say, "Oh, well done, lads." What sort of? I don't even know what sort of message that sends to players.
No.
If they get kudos and appreciation for being so bad.
Well, the thing is, the fans are already voting with their feet by the, I'd say, optimistic official crowd levels. 20,000 there on
tickets sold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But
it wasn't a bad turnout.
It was better than it was against Birmingham. And I think there was announced 14,000 there, and I'll be damned if there was 14,000 in the ground.
There was 19,000 against Bournemouth as well. And that, you know, again, that was highly optimistic. But the, you know, the fans are voting with their feet already, even before this lap of appreciation or lap of apology, as it probably should have been.
Yeah, Carrick going around carrying banners saying we're sorry.
Like you said, if they're putting in 100% and everyone's thinking, you know what, you've got beat, but we can't really argue with that. You've given us all you had. Fine, get a lap of appreciation. But when you're getting beat and you know they've got more in them, walk out.
Yeah. The one person I do feel sorry for was Adam Federici, who, as we've mentioned, did pick up Player of the Season award in possibly his last ever game at the Modesky. And don't forget, this is a guy that's been at the club for basically 10 years, starting from Sonko's sofa and working his way up to, you know, winning Player of the Season.
Was there this week as well, he's Sonko?
He was. Yeah, good link. And you know, he's given the club loyal service. Alex Pearce as well has been at the club. You know, it's his first professional club. And again, given nearly probably best part of, when did he make his debut? 2008.
It's been a long time, yeah.
So, you know, we're talking at least 7 years in the first team, club captain at the moment, well, team captain at the moment, former player of the season, and a couple of others that might have played their last game at the Modesky as well. They deserved better. But Wesley, you were questioning why the player of the season award was given at the end of the game.
Yeah, I think it's strange. I don't understand why you do that. Surely in recent years, we've done it before the match when they get a big round of applause and everyone can give them a good clap. But put it at the end when you've got beat 2-0 and everyone's gone home, it's just embarrassing for them.
I think it was slightly twofold, and I think one of them's a bit more speculative than the other. One is they wanted people to stick around at the end because they realised that no one was going to stick around at the end. And the other one that my dad suggested was, well, that Federici, if he got it, as he did, I think the Brentford fans would have had something to say about that. Now, I think he's made of stronger stuff than to, you know, he'll be able to cope with that. But I don't think there's much to that, to be honest.
I was leaning towards the latter, actually. I thought that might have been because Brentford fans weren't exactly hiding the fact they were going to sing "It's All Your Fault."
Mm.
And I don't know if they wanted the images to be of Federici picking up his award while 3,500 Bees fans gave him grief. Dave, which are you led to believe?
Probably the former, but it wouldn't surprise me if they had. Thinking of the latter, there's nothing more to add, really, to be honest with you. It's just pretty crap from the club, to be honest.
But you'd think even say there's 13,000 Reading fans actually there, they'd drown out 3,500 Brentford fans.
Yeah, very
fans.
True. Just bad. I think it sums up a bad season.
Yeah, it's just bad grim all round. Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, congratulations all the same.
Well done.
Well, and I mean this genuinely, he deserved better. And as I said, certain other players deserve better as well. But again, they need to look around the dressing room and look at those players that they've sat in there week in, week out and been on the training ground with. And maybe throughout the season they should have been, you know, I think Della raised a good point. He said, you know, how many times do you think that they've had a players meeting this season where they've got together and someone said, look, this isn't good enough, lads.
FA Cup matches?
I think it was Joby McAnuff got... the rumour was Joby McAnuff got them together around Christmas time last season and said, look, this isn't good enough. We need to turn our act around. And they did. And they very nearly got to the playoffs. Okay, they bottled it at the end, but they certainly turned themselves around from a pride standpoint.
Yep.
This season, FA Cup, great. League, awful. And with that sour note, we'll hopefully move on to some positive mailbag action. But don't hold your breath.
No, I doubt it.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, welcome back to the mailbag. Thanks to all of you who have sent your tweets to at The Tarlhurst End, who visit the Facebook page at facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End, or dropped us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. I'm going to start this mailbag, gents, with an interesting question that comes in from Ben Print, who says, do you get more tweets when Reading FC have won or more after a defeat when fans want to moan? This mailbag will tell you all you need to know because it is bulging.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to delve right into it. We're going to start with Nick Beckett, who asks, why is there doubt whether the owners will invest in the team? It's not in their interest not to. Anyone else notice that when asked, Sassima said there are four investors, not three? And has anyone also noticed the Thai Airways ads? We'll start with the Thai Airways ads. I noticed them plastered on the south stand.
Yeah, they're also plastered on the back of the shirts now. And yeah. They were at Arsenal. They weren't against in midweek and they were again on Saturday.
Okay.
And I think the Waitrose deal comes to an end this summer.
I thought they'd extended Waitrose.
I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it was on the front.
There was also a new energy drink being advertised on the North Stand as well.
I've never seen that.
I want to say Cordoba, something like that. That's
the best place. Clearly, advertising didn't work.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
in that undersaturated.
I feel it needs to go back to the drawing board. That one
under the undersaturated energy drink market because there's not enough of those out at the moment. But looking at Nick's other points, then any doubts for you about the Thai ownership and their investment?
They're going to have to do something. I think we've all pointed out that we need someone to put the ball in there and they don't come cheap. So again, it'd be nice to see what they do during the summer because it showed their intent to get Reading into Premier League if that's what they want to do.
I mean, all the words coming out of the club are very positive. You know, Sassima meeting them up on the training ground.
And positive words coming out of the football club?
No, Johnny.
Johnny!
It's like Nigel Atkins.
Oh, he fell into the trap and he's fell into the trap.
But yeah, you know, actions speak louder than words, sadly.
Dave, how are you feeling about it?
Remains to be seen, doesn't it? We'll just have to see. I don't think that's there's very little chance of them turning into another TSI, let's put it that way. I think they're going to run it prudently, but if they need to invest, I think they will do. But having said that, time will tell.
The thing is, they have put money into the club. They haven't put it very well into the club with some of the players that we've signed. Certainly the loans and the frees that we've got over the last...
Again, is that their fault?
While Steve Clark's been here. Yeah. But, you know, they've put a certain amount of money into the club. The asset test comes this summer, just like it did in the previous regime.
Are they going to run it in an old Medeski style where he would put just enough in to keep the club ticking over, or are they going to actually push us on? Because
FFP comes into play a big time, though, doesn't it? Because there's only a certain amount we can lose and a certain amount we can be bankrolled, as it were.
Yeah, that was certainly the excuse in January for why we didn't invest more. But I think the rules have relaxed very slightly this summer. So it'll get proven. They can't get out, especially with all the contracts coming off the books as well.
Just to say, they had a good opportunity to drop the wage bill quite a bit. And you'd have thought they'd done pretty well out of the FA Cup this year. So there must be some money floating about, surely.
And one final year of parachute payments. Well, 2 years. We've got next season and the season after as well. So Reading will have a little bit of a leg up. So interesting. In terms of when they said that four investors, not three, that's very clearly Samrit, isn't it? Samrit has clearly got a lot to do with the club. He's talking about it all the time. He's been over here constantly.
Got us Anton Ferdinand.
I don't know if he's actually allowed to invest yet or whether he's a future investor because he refuses to take the... FPP. He's clearly got interest in the club. Again, I'm not a legal expert, I don't know. Obviously, officially, there's only three shareholders, but Samrit seems to very much be the football one of them. So I think that's where it comes from. Whether she just means investors in times of time, energy, and commitment rather than finance. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a little bit open-ended.
But yeah, I'm not sure. The Football League, again, there's rules there for a reason. You know, Football League just don't allow anybody to pump money into the club. So we'll have to take them at their word for that.
Let's see how good they are when QPR get relegated as well.
Yeah, QPR obviously facing a near £90 million fine or threat of expulsion from the Football League if they don't pay it.
Well, their wage bill was ridiculous in the Championship.
Well, that's what they got the fine for.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's no way they can sustain that at QPR.
So,
and they've tried massaging the figures this season as well, and just turned around and said, screw you.
It was just dead money or something, didn't they put it down to?
It was like loans from the owners to the football club that they'd then written off and said, okay, we didn't actually lose the money because the owners have relinquished their right to get the money back.
It wasn't written in a dog's account, was it?
You can read plenty more on that other reputable websites. So search for that if you're interested in QPR's finances.
The facts.
Yes. Rafa Benitez facts. Moving on, Stuart Fenton. Lots of calls for playing the kids, but are they good enough? For example, Tanner hasn't scored in 18 games at Wimbledon.
He's not a striker. Why would you measure him on goals?
Yeah. I've heard pretty good things coming out. I think people at Wimbledon have been saying... Yeah, but they've been saying... His all-round game is good. He just needs that goal.
Yeah, he looked lively when he came on. He did make one mistake.
Scored on his debut, didn't he, Tanner? Against Newport.
He hadn't done no worse than anyone else, so it's worth a try.
I think had Rotherham not been docked that 3 points, we would have seen a very different squad on Tuesday night. Because I think, like he did against Birmingham, where he rotated the squad because it was a meaningless game, he can't do that anymore because the Rotherham game now matters. If they hadn't been docked the 3 points, they'd be safe already because Millwall and... Wigan wouldn't be able to catch them. But now, you know, he's always said that he's got a commitment to the league to play a full-strength side against teams that are still playing for something. You see that against Bournemouth and you see it against Brentford.
It's a little bit random in the fact that we haven't won for weeks. So even if you did change all the sides...
You could justify it.
You could justify it by saying, well, this lot are rubbish, so I've tried someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you, Dave, put a few more of the youngsters in?
I think so. I think it's probably worth at least having a look, at the likes of Aaron Cool, Craig Tanner... Jack Stacey's been having a look in recently over the last couple of games, hasn't he? And Novakovic came off
against Cooper as well.
Cooper. There's no reason why you shouldn't. No reason why you shouldn't at all.
Yeah, and I don't think some people thrive when they're out on loan. Others don't, and still have a decent career. So
the only thing I would say is that you've got to play quite a few leaders, as it were, in the team with them. So some of the people to players that are gonna, lead them.
Yeah,
essentially.
Agreed. Ollie Allen says, perhaps a bit harsh, but who would win the worst player of the season award? Do you want to? I think we'll leave this one because that's going to be part of our season finale podcast. So we'll leave that one there, but I think you can guess a few candidates.
Yeah, but worst or disappointing, depends how you want to look at it.
Exactly. I think we prefer to phrase it as disappointing because there's a difference between being a bad footballer and then not living up to your potential. Moving on. Ben Print again, his tweet earlier about do fans tweet in more when we've won or lost.
Just to say on the on the question of bringing in the under 21s, I see that at the time of recording, Reading under 21s are 2-0 up against Stoke under 21s at half time at the Medeski. So if you've turned up, you've probably seen a goal for the first time in about 2 months.
We should have done the podcast from there, shouldn't we? With a free of charge, with no charge to get in.
Yeah, a couple of drinks as well. Yeah.
And we could have had a promotion party.
yeah.
Damn, opportunity missed. Tim Redman says, my 3 seasons so far in the Upper West have averaged £64.75 per Reading win or £15 per Reading goal. That's not good.
There was something I missed as well, speaking about after parties. They'd done one in a jazz cafe after the match.
It's DJ Mega Party DJing it.
DJ Mega Party. The best thing was about this, and this is what the point I was going to make, is it was another damp squib of an affair because we went up there. The DJ was late because he was caught in traffic, and by the time he turned out, everyone left.
You mean they didn't employ the services of the actual DJ Mega Party
himself?
Well,
maybe they did, but he couldn't get there for some reason.
He got lost on his way back from the West Stand down to the Jazz Cafe.
I think he should, when the fans think, is there a fire drill, you should put the siren on. There is a fire drill.
I did quite like that siren. Can I get you going?
Really?
Yeah.
This is going to be another club dash.
Going out the stadium.
Yeah. I drink in the Jazz Cafe before matches, before the vast majority of home matches. I didn't even know that party was going on.
Did you not see the lovingly crafted sign outside?
It didn't go on.
No is the answer to that.
It's like there's a sign outside the Jazz Cafe that's got a list of upcoming artists, and it's been like the same two blokes, Rich Austin and somebody else for about the past 3 years.
Like Womack and Womack will turn up at some point.
God. Moving on. Yeah, that's terrible. I think I did a piece a few months ago talking about the stale factor, and I looked at similar figures of how much Reading fans have been paying for wins and goals. And that sums it up. And again, it's bad because, okay, the season ticket prices are very fair, but again, you're paying still shelling out nearly 400 quid of your money for not a lot of entertainment.
We did have the ball in the back of the net on Saturday.
Yeah, we did.
But it was offside.
Mar was offside.
Was it Blackman or...
Chalobah. Yeah. After Robson Kalou had missed.
Yeah, from standing chance.
Yeah. Well, it was a good save, to give him a bit of credit. But
just one more thing. If the chap wants better value for money, move from the Upper West.
Yeah, in the library. He might want to get some sleep. Might want to get a few pages through.
Get down to Basingstoke. That's where the money's being saved this time of year. They're in the playoffs, aren't they?
They are. They are. And their player of the year is Stuart Moore, who is a Reading loanee.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go. Get down and support them. I think the playoff final is May the 9th, should they make it through.
Disappointing to hear that Drax Hippolyte's leaving Maidenhead.
Yeah.
What a great name he's got as well.
Fantastic name.
Great name.
It's an institution on Berkshire on the way home from games. Jason Talk Bristow. To Drax.
Jason.
Drax and Jason Bristow. Anyway, we're getting off track.
It's a bad season when you're talking about Basingstoke.
Mad Stad Blues says, we need specialist wingers, cross of the ball and strikers, not jack-of-all-trade utility players. Discuss.
But you know that McCleary and Mackie have got, on their day, they're unplayable.
But Mackie isn't an out-and-out winger, is he?
No, but he's fulfilled that role quite well. And, you know, when he got moved up top, McCleary, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, he was sensational. So you know these players have got it in the locker. But none of them, I think on our match report, I said in our defence, we've got an Australian goalie who, you know, an international. Pearce has played for Ireland. You've got Gunter, who's the Welsh right-back. Michael Hector, second in player of the season, so much potential there. Midfield has got Chalobah, who's an under 21. Norwood, who is a decent player. Northern Irish, yeah.
Williams, American.
Williams, American international.
McCleary, Jamaican.
Kanu.
Robson Kanu, Welsh.
So there is enough talent in there, but they just can't unlock it.
Or enough really bad international teams.
Yeah.
I agree, you do need specialist players. When Reading had a genuine striker in Glenn Murray, it made a difference. I bet Clark really wished he'd had him, because even in, I think Clark got 3 or 4 games out of Murray, and he looked to be really bad. He scored a couple at Brighton, played well, I think, in the Norwich game at home.
You could hit him as well, can you? If it went to him, it stuck.
But again, you can't just get away with, how many different players have you tried up front? The likes of Blackman and Robson Kanu, who just aren't strikers, are they?
They're not.
Yeah, and the most telling thing is on Wednesday, when we rotate the entire squad, Simon Cox isn't even in the squad. He isn't even in the 18.
Yeah, there's something he doesn't fancy. He said to Reading Berkshire after the game that there was a couple of things he told Cox he wanted him to work on. Cox was a bit disappointed that he wasn't involved in the team, but he's a player. He didn't exactly give him the mass back. He said, oh, he's a player here under contract here next season. Yeah. Not, I really love Simon
that's
Cox.
That's politician talk, that is.
Exactly. Don't think Steve Clark's his biggest fan, we'll put it that way. Right, moving on. Sam Stevenson. Would you agree that a striker isn't necessarily what we need this summer? Our team link-up player has been awful. Look at Murray since he left us. Scoring for fun with a better team. Makes you wonder what Pogg, Cox and Carney could do with decent service. We've lacked that since Gilfie left. We'd take Dorans or someone similar over a striker. Well, I'll disagree with the since Gilfie left, because we won the league the season after Gilfie left. So he didn't do too badly out of that.
Yeah, but apart from that one.
Yeah, apart from winning the league.
And who did we have up front and who completely changed the season? Jason Roberts, a striker.
Yep.
I watched, I posted on YouTube on Sunday because I was feeling a bit blue about all things Reading, the highlights from that West Ham game.
Yep.
Jason Roberts' bulldozing run for that second goal.
Yeah.
You could just never imagine how Robson Kanu doing it in a million
years. He wouldn't be able to do it.
He just literally bulldozed his way through, and the ball bobbled down to Noel Hunt, who stuck it in the back of the net. And even the first goal, a beautiful Ian Hart corner. Our corners this year.
Awful.
Yeah.
And free kicks have been terrible. When was the last time we scored a free kick?
Probably Cardiff, Ollie Norwood.
Yeah.
When was the last time we actually scored from a corner?
Was it Cooper's goals at Norwich?
Early in the season we scored a
couple. To be fair, I think we had... Was it a corner or was it a free kick out wide? It might have been a beta free kick where there was a goalmouth scramble against Birmingham on last Saturday, Wednesday night.
Didn't go in,
but we had 3 bites at the cherry and none of them went in.
Yeah, again, our set pieces have been poor all season.
But what do you agree with? Do you agree with Sam's general point that it might not be the striker, it might be the midfield and the wingers that need looking, the creativity department?
You can't just pin it down to one area. You've got a midfield that lacks dynamism. You've got wide players who clearly, you know, aren't, well, at the moment, on current form, aren't up to the job. You've got a forward your number one, or your number 7 striker in this case, in Pogrebniak, does a lot of work, but the majority of it is outside the flipping box. Get your ass in the box. Mm. You've got, yeah, you know, substandard strikers. There's so much about the side that is just wrong.
But if you look at the last three games, Brentford, Birmingham and Arsenal, can we say we haven't had chances to score goals? Because I think we have had chances to score goals.
You have.
Absolutely.
A striker would have finished them.
We had more than enough to beat Brentford and we had more than enough to beat Arsenal. So, the striker, we need someone to put a ball in.
I still don't think they've had an abundance. It's not like Reading are missing really great chances.
They've not had an abundance, but even if you look at, who was it played last week? Bournemouth, right? How many chances did they have to score against Reading? Two, and they put one in the net.
Mm.
That's the difference. You've got to have quality up front who can put football in it.
So Sam says he'd rather have Dorans over someone like a striker.
Yeah,
I think there's a case to be had for that. They're certainly missing a true
creative,
proper number. Well, I suppose you'd call it number 8, number 10. I'm not really sure what number you'd give him. Probably in this day and age, probably end up with number 34 on his back.
99.
But, yeah, there's an argument for it. But having said that, our top scorer this season, joint top scorer along with Glenn Murray, Simon Cox, who played the majority of his time in that role.
Mm.
Yeah.
And Murray had more than enough chances to score goals. I mean, he's a better striker, simple as that.
Murray would have 16, well, on that ratio, he'd have 16, 17 goals.
Easily have that many.
Absolutely. I would say, I think
that doesn't remind me of the sorry to interrupt you, the Reading side 04-05, which is basically, you know, based around Kitson.
Yeah. But, there's not enough goals in the whole team. No. If you look around the side,
we pointed it out, didn't we?
The midfield's record of goal scoring this year has been awful.
Abysmal. Mm. Beyond all, just abysmal. Thomas says, what is a realistic target for next season? Playoffs, or given the number of expected changes, will we do well just to avoid relegation again and then make a charge in 2016-17? I can't answer this one because, there's so many variables. Yeah. I don't know.
You can't answer it.
No.
There's too much you don't know, but what you do know as a Reading fan is that the pieces are there for a good side. And for whatever reason, the last two managers haven't been able to unlock it. Maybe we think they're better than they are. Or maybe, yeah. That's the only thing I can say, because I don't think anyone thought that we would be this close to the relegation places at the start of the season.
I don't think it's that, because if you look at the record of some of these players and how they've done in their careers, I mean, there are still several players there that won the league we're running a few years ago. Alex Pearce was player of the season and a championship winning side. Alan Federici should have been the PFA goalkeeper of the year that year. How Kelvin Davis won it, I don't know. Mm.
Hector will get better.
Ollie Norwood, again, we said he was one of the best players the first half of the season. There are some very talented... Gareth McCleary was being talked about for a massive Premier League move.
It's interesting you hark back to that side, because surely that was when the rot first started to set in. Because if you remember, the first half of that season, we didn't score. We scored probably one or two goals in the first half of that season. Or went the first half of that season without scoring a goal.
Yeah, but I don't think that had too much to do with Adam Federici or Alex Pearce.
No, but the point is that shall we say the lack of creativity and the lack of goals first started to set in back then?
Oh, no, agreed. You had Simon Church poking in a few to get some big wins.
I mean, it's 6 yards out. Yeah. 6 feet out, 6 inches out.
No, I don't disagree whatsoever, but I would say that there are players within this unit that you could plug in to a successful side.
You don't need a lot to make it better. That's what you're saying, I think. If you maybe added two players of quality, it'd make it a much better
More
side.
Than two for me. I think you need at least
I don't think it's a strong league. I thought all year I've looked at teams and thought, is this really the top of the championship? Because it's not great.
Well, if you match up player to player every week, there's not... Obviously, every team's got its superstars. You know, you're not going to match Jordan Rhodes up with Nick Blackburn and say, oh, well, Nick Blackburn's
that's close.
But there are a lot of the times...
Championship striker of the decade, Jordan Rhodes.
Yeah. But a lot of the times you compare the two teams and you say, is there an awful lot between these two players?
No, not really. On paper, it has certainly the makings or the blueprint of a team that can be on the
playoffs. And they've beaten the best. The funny thing is they've actually beaten decent sides this year.
And we know we've got some of the best youth teams in the country. So there's plenty to be positive about, but it's just there's something missing.
You're shaking your head slightly there, Dave.
No. Fill it with my ears.
Fill it with your ears.
Yeah.
A good season for me would be, you know, we're playing well and we're in with a chance at the end of the season.
It needs freshening up, let's face it. It needs freshening up.
I think if Reading aren't competing for the playoffs next season, it'll be a disappointing season. Mm. I think competing for the playoffs should be a minimum. I'm not saying they've got to make it.
You've got to make it a target. You can't say, well, if we stay up, everyone will be
Well, no, not even a target. I'm saying if Reading aren't in with a shot at the playoffs within say, five games to go, I think it's been a disappointing season next year.
Win the first five games.
The first 14 set a new record.
But it, yeah, too many variables to really ask that. George Olin says, should Clark be considered a success so far? Do we have reasons to be confident in him next year? And Pierce Swenny also says, should Clark stay? So a couple of questions on Clark, and I put this one off earlier, Westy.
I'm going to assume this isn't Pierce Sweeney who's...
No, it's Pierce Swenny.
Under 21 centre-back.
No.
I don't think you should be tweeting that stuff.
Yeah. A bit of a school wearer if it was.
Yeah.
Thoughts, Clark?
Well, I think, take the FA Cup out of it, it's been poor. And you can't say he hasn't brought in some of his own men, because he had Chaloba, he had the other lad from Chelsea who's a good player, he's been allowed to bring in loan players that have been pretty much a disaster. He's not got the best out of the side. He had a little start where he was okay, stopped conceding goals. But since then, not been good enough.
Do you consider him a success so far, Johnny?
No. But the thing I'd say is, it's not quite the same situation that Nigel Adkins came into, in that Nigel Adkins, you know, we were going down already and Nigel Adkins couldn't do anything to do that. But we gave him, you know, the first half of the next season to prove himself. And I think with this side, as we've alluded to, you know, I don't think we're making excuses for him. I think it's patently obvious that the team are not motivated and needs freshening up. Now, you know, he managed to turn it around initially when he came in. We put together a few decent results, but you know, since then it hasn't been too good. But I think most Reading fans are willing to give him certainly the first half of next season.
I think to place a firm judgment on a manager, you've got to give him a whole season.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Absolutely. You have to. Unless... I mean, should Clark stay? Well, what a daft question. Should he stay? Of course he should bloody well stay. Judge him on the summer. Judge him on a full season. And, you know, even if we're knocking in around sort of the lower reaches of mid-table, you know, 16th, 17th, 18th, but safe from relegation, it won't necessarily be satisfactory, but he hasn't taken us down. And in fact, actually, if we do finish 18th next season, it's probably going to be an improvement on this season anyway.
So it's going to take a lot to improve, isn't it?
Well, exactly. No, give him a full season. I mean, because, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah. All you want to see from a manager is them taking steps forward.
Yeah.
That's all you ask. All you ask is that they're moving forward. And they might have one step back. But if you're taking two steps forward, then again, on the balance of things, you're moving forward. And that's all he asked from Steve Clark.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting for one second they should begin looking for another manager. What the question was, do you view it as a success?
He's got a worse, worse points per game ratio than the man that got sacked.
And the FA Cup has skated over that fact.
Yeah.
A little bit when McDermott turned over.
He has been our worst Championship manager since Terry Bullivant. And that's a stone cold fact.
And he didn't have, and we said this before we started the show today, he didn't have the players, he had the players at his disposal that Adkins didn't.
Yeah, he's had a much better group to work with than Nigel Adkins had, and definitely, he's done worse. So on that, he's not done well. But as you pointed to, Dave, this rot set in a couple of managers ago. This isn't the first manager that struggled with this group of players. Brian McDermott was only going one way with this group. Nigel Adkins obviously couldn't stop the slide either. And that's continued under Clark. This is the third straight season of decline. And at that point, I think you have to start looking at the players rather than the manager. But yeah, give Clark the summer, see who he buys, see how he starts next year, and we'll see where it goes. Fluke Mag says, form-wise, who should be ditched in the end of season clear-out? Probably. We've had this a few times this season, but it's quicker to talk about the players you want to build around.
I mean, the thing is, you have to realise that there has to be a buyer.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not exactly going to say to some of these players, "Oh, this player hasn't really." We have King Nick. Do you want him?
King Nick. Yeah. Nick, this is your summer.
Yeah.
Anyone can put together a great YouTube video, although the Nick Blackman highlight YouTube video might be tricky to put together.
Yeah.
Just showing that pre-season goal against Swansea. Look at this guy.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
No, that's what I mean. No one's going to take anyone off your hands, and anyone they would want to take off your hands, you wouldn't want to sell.
I'm going to say something. For me, I don't think there is a single Reading player at the moment that I consider indispensable. I don't think... You could say Hector and Abita, maybe.
I'd say Hector.
Abita hasn't been brilliant, but you've got to build around your youth, surely.
Yeah, but for the right offer, would you be gutted as a fan to lose any of that squad? Because for me,
I'd be disappointed to lose Hector.
Definitely.
I'd be very disappointed to lose Hector.
Gutted.
Disappointed... Would it surprise me though? Is you know, if it's surprising, then yes, it's sort of bordering on the realms of gutted, in the right way.
But if Arsene Wenger came up and stumped up, said, "Here's 7 million for Michael Hector."
Yeah, but again, it's the same old problem we've had down the years. If you give him 7 million, is it going to get reinvested? If it's not, you may as well keep him because you're not going to replace a player like that.
I don't think Michael Hector will go this season.
I think
he's still
too a little raw.
Yeah, too unrefined. And
but then we also said that about Guilfi now. It's totally different, different kettle of fish in terms of position on the pitch.
Mm.
But for my money, Michael Hector is every bit as good a defender as Guilfi was an attacking midfielder.
Mm. Yeah, maybe.
Individually.
They've got to get him under contract again. He's only got 1 year left.
Mm.
Yeah, that would be a priority, I'd have thought, just because they wouldn't want to lose out on the money for selling him.
Well, he does seem like a nice, down-to-earth bloke. But again, God help us if we get into a position where Michael Hector starts hearing about interest from these clubs and starts refusing to sign a deal, because if he does take that stance, in this era, they can't let him go for free. And again, we saw how it nearly happened with Alex Pearce. They don't want to go through that again.
Anybody know who his agent is?
Hopefully not the same one as Alex Pearce's.
That's how Robert Carney's brother, isn't it?
Dave Robson.
Dave Robson Canoe, yeah. Don't know who his agent is. But I will say that, actually, Pearce is a very nice guy, so that doesn't play in any part of it. Again, football's a business. And it's up to Reading to make him an offer, and hopefully he'll accept it. So, again, as I said, but for me, I mean, you're not mentioning two other many names cropping up in that. I throw out Jordan Obita, but is there anyone else that you would say Reading have got to hold on to this player no matter what next season?
Danny Williams.
Yeah, I like Danny Williams.
Yeah.
I like him. Injuries, though.
And McCleary.
He's played the best part of 6 months, though, without an injury. Starting to prove it.
Yeah.
How much of that was down to Adkins? Because Adkins had a chronic problem with injuries.
It was awful, yeah.
Very true. But again, he's a player on high wages as well.
I think McCleary as well. I know he hasn't had a particularly good season, but again, how much money are you going to have to spend to replace him?
And I'm not saying I don't want to keep any of these players.
No, I'm saying
from my point of view, if the decent bid, and in the case of likes of Williams, Obita and McCleary, it'd probably have to be better than decent.
I think them three were the only ones I wouldn't want to see go.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be, everyone else I wouldn't be too worried about.
Yeah. Any other names before we move on?
I'd like to keep Federici, but I think the goalkeeping position is one that we've always seemed to have a very good production line on.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that worries me is the prospect of losing Federici and Anderson. And we don't even know how good Anderson is, really. I mean, he's only played, what, 2 games in the Championship this year? And those were his first ever games for Reading.
Mm. We'll see. Moving on to Simeon, who says, an assistant editor here at the Tyler Stand, says, does Ollie Norwood have a future at Reading beyond the summer? Hasn't done well under Clark.
Hasn't played under Clark.
He's clearly not Clark's sort of midfielder, I don't think.
He
likes high energy midfielders, and you can't say Norwood's that. Norwood's a ball player. He can pick a pass, but he's not putting in big tackles. He's not running up and down.
As I said, he was, for me, the player of 2015. And for our readers as well. 2014, yeah. Or, you know, the second half of 2014, because he won, I think, 3 of our Player of the Month votes. He's just, you know, gone completely quiet since then.
Future for Norwood?
Probably not. But it's interesting you mentioned that he's not a Clark sort of player. Clark likes high-energy players, as you say. He likes physical players. It's a raw stat, but I read, I think, it would have been 2 or 3 weeks ago, that I think it was a specific game that Norwood had put in more tackles in this specific game than any other player on the pitch.
Yeah, he might well have done, but I'd said earlier in the season that when you watch Norwood in midfield, he looks light on occasions. And I think Clark likes big, strong, powerful midfielders. I don't think Norwood's that.
Huddersfield won't go to losing.
No, he's not a Premier League footballer, is he?
I certainly think there is a role for Oliver Norwood. I don't think Clark, I don't think he disregards him. He has played him quite a bit. He's plugged him in. He's obviously preferred Shelliber and Ake to him, but
who are better players, to be fair.
Better, yeah. I think there's a role, but again,
throw the curveball in there. The most physical game we've had to play in this second half of the season was away at Bradford, and he shoved him in that.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. I don't think there's a future at the club for him, but whether he'll be a starter every week, I doubt.
Very much. No, absolutely not.
Right, moving on. Couple of last tweets. We weren't lying about the size of the mailbag. Mm-hmm. Been going at this for nearly half an hour now. RMC says, worst team for some time. I also doubt Clark has the ability to prove it much either. So not a Clark fan.
Give the guy a chance.
Yeah, and Phil, we'll finish with Phil Reed, who says, what's the plan to make a real difference? More of the same, unacceptable, worst season for a long time, refresh badly needed. Jury has to still be out on Clark, has not proved his worth yet. So there are a few fans not overly convinced with Steve Clark.
It's difficult to argue with that last one, really.
They got the balance right there. The other, the chap before just seemed to be, yeah.
I'll just quickly get your thoughts on this. I reckon that, and I'll be running a series of this on the summer about the worst running teams in the Medeski era. For me,
positivity.
A positive piece, obviously. For me, this is the worst running team since those, probably since the first Tommy Burns side. Well, arguably the second one was even worse, but this for me is the worst running team since Tommy Burns.
Yeah. Difficult to argue with that, given the fact that since we've been promoted, this is the first time that we've finished in the bottom of the bottom half of the table of the championship.
It's not the worst. It's not the worst group, as in if you looked ability wise, obviously.
Yeah. Again, it's not the worst set of players we've ever had, but as a team, you'd have to say probably.
And as I said, I never thought I'd be longing for the likes of Paul Brooker, Lloyd Owusu, and Dean Morgan. But even all three of those would probably have got into my team on Saturday.
They were managed by a very, very astute man, though. Yeah. Let's face it.
Sean Gota would have.
They put ball in there, all of them people you mentioned.
Yeah. And that's just how bad it's got.
Yeah, maybe not.
That's how bad it's got. Paul Brooker had a wonderful cross on him. It was about the only thing he did have going for him, but he had a really, really good cross on him. Get him in the right position, and he'd stick it on a sixpence.
Yeah. No one's disagreeing.
Again,
can't disagree. No.
But I'll give you the chance to disagree when you see my excellently crafted piece come the summer.
Okay. So,
reason to stay tuned to thetalesn.com. And that ends the mailbag at nearly half an hour. Thank you to all of you who've sent in your tweets, emails to at thetalesnd on Twitter, thetalesnd@gmail.com for the emails, and facebook.com/thetalesnd. We're going to round up and preview the final championship games of the season next.
The Talhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. It's time to predict, as I said, the last two championship games of the season. And they being Rotherham on Tuesday night and Derby on Saturday.
Points as well, he said earlier. Yeah, double points.
We'll come on to our prediction league very...
I'm playing my joker.
We'll come on to the prediction league shortly. But talking of those games, they're two absolutely massive games for the two teams involved that obviously aren't Reading. If Rotherham win at the New York Stadium on Tuesday night, they will be safe and relegate Millwall and Wigan. A draw would, I believe, relegate Wigan, but keep Millwall in the hunt. So they need a result, certainly. And for Derby, they've got to hold off a surging Brentford side. And it's almost it was unthinkable a couple of months ago to think that Derby could slip out of the playoffs. It was unthinkable to think they'd slip out of the automatic promotion places. So again, they need to win to secure their place in the top six. So it's all to play for as far as the opposition goes. Gents, can you see Reading raising their games to spoil any days for home fans?
well, can I just add, if I was looking at the psychology of everything, if I was a Wigan or Millwall fan now, I'd be thinking, well, let's look at where we're going to go next year, because I wouldn't be banking on Reading to get any results, would you?
I think it was Gregory, the Millwall striker, today said, oh, I'm hoping that Rotherham bottle it. And I'm thinking, mate, come on. You ain't got a prayer.
Yeah, start planning your bank holidays in Blackpool, mate.
Okay. Yeah. Let's try and get some rare positivity in here. And let me throw out a positive argument for this. The pressure is now so off Reading, and they probably would have gotten a bit of a rocket on Saturday from Steve Clark. Some of them will be playing for their futures in terms of not just this club, but trying to catch the eye of an agent or two. Could you see them? And they are against a team that, well, they're fourth from bottom. They're not very good.
Yeah, but where are we? We're sixth from bottom.
Yeah.
We're not very good either.
No.
There is a chance, especially at Rotherham, I think, for Reading to get a result.
I think there's a chance, but especially with what's happened with their points deduction, they're going to be fired up more than anything. And let's be honest, their manager looks like the sort of person who could fire a rocket up you as well.
Yeah.
Steve Evans, well, the nicest man in football, I've heard.
Well,
I don't think he will be on tomorrow night.
He's got a big heart.
Big everything else as well.
Yeah.
Really?
Chance to go to a new ground. It is all tickets, so if you're thinking of pitching up on the day, you won't have much luck. And I said, then it's a trip to Derby for another inflatables day. This would almost be poetic, though, for Reading fans who had to endure Derby fans taunting them on the way down in 2008. Should Reading keep them in the Championship for another season?
Yeah, that would be fun.
A ground, Dave. That Reading have got a good record at.
We have, yes, a very good record. It's quite a happy hunting ground. It's just that playing Derby on the whole, it's Generally, well, 9 times out of 10, 3 points for us. Yeah. Not this season, obviously, where we decided to, you know, allow them to score 3 times for the first time in Berkshire. but would I be confident of a win? No.
The scene of Yakubu's only goal for Reading. Could Lightning strike twice?
Ever.
Do you think we'll see Yakubu in the Reading shirt again? Has he been put out to graze?
They found his passport and realised that he's not 32.
You can imagine what a joy is that night. Yakubu, Travner, people of that are on the training ground right now.
Jesus.
Says it all, folks.
We wonder why we're down the bottom.
So sorry if you're a Rotherham and Derby fan listening to this podcast, but we can't give you a lot of hope. What we will do, though, is go into our prediction league. Now, this has been running all season long, and it's come down to the last 2 games of the season.
Oh.
Unfortunately, Charles Watts can't win the league, nor can Westy. I'm sorry.
Can I finish second?
You could draw. Yeah, and the tiebreaker is correct score.
Wouldn't it be like golf, count back? So if I manage to get these two back, then I'll finish second.
No. It is not.
Fair enough.
So the situation is I am leading on 26 points. Johnny is second on 24. And Westy and Charles are tied on 18 apiece. Obviously 3 points for a correct scoreline, 1 for a correct result. So being the leader, I will predict first for Rotherham. We'll snake this round.
Fair enough.
So I'll predict first for Rotherham. And as much as I've just said I fancy Reading to get a result... I can't look past the natural Rotherham win. I think Reading are actually going to score in this game, though. I think this is going to be a 2-1 home win.
That should be double points straight away.
Johnny Williams.
I'm going to go for a 1-1.
1-1.
Yeah.
Alan West.
Right, in a last-ditch, chuck the kitchen sink at it prediction. After all I've said, I'm going to go for an unbelievable Reading away win, 2-0.
2-0.
Clean sheet.
Wow.
2 goals. Clean
sheet. Honorary prediction from yourself?
I'll take a score draw 1-1 just to see if we can get relegated.
Not a 3-1, Dave. It's unprecedented.
Yeah.
Not
going I should have scored three goals.
When was the last time we scored three goals in a game, with the exception of Bradford?
When was the last time we added all up, we could score 3 goals?
When was the last time we scored 3 goals in a game, actually, thinking about it?
It was looking
back. It's not even on that sheet.
No. In fact, it was Rotherham at home.
Oh, hello.
There you go.
Rotherham at home.
We've only scored 2 goals in the last 6 games.
Yeah.
We've only scored 5 goals. Oh, obviously not at home. 5 goals at home since...
We scored obviously 3 against Bradford, but...
Well, yeah, but...
So you have to go back to the Rotherham game at home under Nigel Adkins.
Oh, my God.
For those 3 against Bradford, one was scored against... Well, it was scored by Hal Ross and Cannon, which doesn't really count, and no one was deflected.
Right. So 1-1?
Yeah, 1-1, yep.
Or as my spreadsheet's predicted it, the 1st of January 2015. And Derby, we'll start again from the back. So, Dave, we'll go for you first.
3-1.
Yeah, true to form, go on. 3-1 win.
3-1 Reading win.
3-1 win. Yeah, they're going to Derby going to spaff it against us.
I should say as well, Charles Watts has predicted a 2-0 win to Rotherham.
Okay.
Yeah, so, fair enough.
I haven't got Charles' prediction yet. I'm going to get that on Friday. So he does have a bit of an edge over you, Westy, but I'll get your prediction anyway.
Right, I'm going to go for unprecedented. Away win.
Away? Whoa.
4-0.
0-4.
This sounds
it's
very
2008. I look forward to Leroy.
We only need 3 more, then we don't get relegated.
If this comes in, I'll be a millionaire.
I look forward to Leroy Leiter scoring.
You've got to put a tenner on that as well, mate.
Oh, I have to, don't I?
As a double.
Yeah, definitely double.
Johnny, after your prediction, find out how much we make for that.
Gamble away, by the way.
Gamble away. Johnny, before you do that, your prediction for Derby?
What are you going to... 3-1. 3-1 to Derby.
3-1 Derby County. And I'm going to predict 3-1 Derby... No, I'm not. I do see a Derby win.
3-0 Warlock.
No, I see a 2-0 Derby victory. So there we have it. That is the end of the prediction league for this year.
What do you reckon? 2-0 to Reading.
2-0 win at Rotherham and a 4-0 win at Derby.
All right.
While Johnny just goes through those computations then.
4-0 to Reading is 400-1.
Yes. Get on it. summer holiday sorted.
Get the double on. Is 8,500 to 1.
I'm going to insass them. See if she wants, she wants to join me in this.
How far have Reading fallen that a 2-0 win at Rotherham, and okay, admittedly a 4-0 win at Derby, but just two, any combination of two Reading wins can get you odds of over 8,000 to 1?
Probably must be about 10 to 1 just to win at Derby, I thought.
Yeah.
Straight up.
6 to 1, yeah.
If you stick a tenner on that and it comes in, then you can buy the drinks that the podcast
will. I'll buy the club.
Just a casual 85 grand. Or a couple of weeks for Royston Drenthe.
Listen, I've been betting, I've been predicting sensibly all season. That ain't got me nowhere.
Yeah, well, gambler aware, folks.
Yeah.
That just about wraps it up. There's nothing else to talk about. The season is mercifully at an end. Two games to go. We can only hope that Reading surprise us.
With 6 goals in 2 matches.
With 6 goals in 2 games and win Alan West 85 grand. Should we do that, we'll be recording our next episode from Vegas.
Yeah, definitely.
But in all seriousness,
we can get a Thai Airways flight over there.
We can. We will. We have got two episodes of the show left. We've got a Friday podcast section with myself and Charles where we'll look ahead to that Derby game. And we've got our end of season show, which we'll be doing from a local establishment in the Reading area. Venue and time, and in fact, date all to be confirmed. We're going to try and get a date that can see as many of us, not just the regular crew here, but some of the other voices you've heard and words you've read on the website down as possible. So it's a bit of a tricky one getting everyone together, but we'll try and get as many as you can and also invite as many of yourselves down as possible to have a drink and be good to put some faces to the tweets we're getting every week.
Mm-hmm.
But full details of that will be up on the website. I'll put up as a full article as well as going on the Twitter. So stay tuned to at the Tyler Stand and obviously to the website. But gentlemen, thank you very much. This is the last one coming from the studio. So it's been a good year.
Has it?
Yeah, I'm off to do my lap of honour. Appreciation.
Yeah. Apology.
To an empty lap house.
Apology to an empty house. Yeah, even my newfound wife can't bear
it. We should have had a podcast of the year award so you could get presented with it and no one here.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
I think the podcast of the year is almost certainly goes to you, Westy, for how you talked about the favourite man, your crush in the Reading squad.
Oh, Pog.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You've got a champagne moment for this week, or the season, perhaps.
No, it's the champagne moment.
It's a champagne moment.
Champagne moment for the week.
I don't think there was much of a champagne moment.
Sonko.
Yeah, it probably was Sonko.
Playing Superman.
Yeah, half time.
Right, that wraps up. If you've stuck with us for this time, thank you very much. Thanks for downloading and subscribing on iTunes, and we will see you all in around a week's time.